This is Meditate and Conversate, a podcast for those invested in wellness and enlightenment. Interviews with experts in their fields and meditations that put theory into practice. Hosted by former news anchor, trauma-sensitive yoga teacher, and designated experienced registered yoga teacher 500-hour, Lindsay Barusi.
Heidi Dyer is the creator of Crone Comfort and Wisdom, a website and private Facebook group dedicated to the celebration, connection, and support of women in midlife and beyond. As a teacher and artist, Heidi's been leading individuals through the process of inquiry and self-discovery for more than 20 years. She holds an MFA in dance and is certified in yoga therapy with advanced trainings in yin and restorative yoga. She joins us today from Portugal to talk about the things she wishes she would have known about perimenopause and much more. Thank you so much for taking time for us, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad we can connect. You're out there in Portugal, and I think last time we talked, you had some sheep in the background.
No, yes. Sheep today. No sheep. I'm in my business here in the center of Porto Alegre, which is a small village in the interior of Portugal. And so we might hear, you know, some children or people on the street, but no sheep today.
No sheep today. I'm kind of sad about that.
I know. They're nice, right?
Yeah. We connected because you put out this very moving blog on your website that then I got passed on about perimenopause and a very truthful look at what you went through that you didn't feel like people were talking about. So let's start there. Can you bring me back to when you said this entire life change and shift began when you were 39?
Yeah. So I started going through perimenopause probably about 5 years before any of my friends. So it was really an especially lonely and confusing time because I had never heard anyone really speak about it. Like, you go into the pharmacy and you see some of the, you know, intimate gels and the, you know, products for hair loss for women and things. And it, but it's like, you don't really connect the dots until these things start to happen to you or to people that you know. And I think, you know, the more that we share our stories and the more we see our stories reflected in others, the more we can come into this transition prepared. And it is a time that there can be much gained. So I think the more we are prepared, the more we can benefit from that.
I can imagine that would be kind of jarring to start to feel some changes and not really know what was happening.
Yeah, I didn't know at all. It started with really erratic mood swings and usually tipping over more into anger, and not even anger, I would say rage. Like, I describe it as becoming a fire-breathing hell goddess. It's like, yeah, this almost destructive impulse. And I don't know if that's tied in with the hot flashes, but, you know, it was like, you know, flames on the side of my face. And these moments where, because sometimes that's the appropriate response, right? That can be a helpful thing. But in this case, those moments were happening at times that it wasn't to scale. It didn't match the circumstances around me. And it was a bit frightening to feel kind of out of control and to not understand why. Like, we're meaning-making machines. Like, we want to understand why things are happening, right? And so it's like, if I don't know, it's up to me to invent, like, you know, a reason for this happening. And luckily, I did start to have some other symptoms. And then eventually, you know, through conversations with my mother and my sister-in-law, and eventually a naturopath, I started to understand more of what was going on.
You talked a little bit about this crushing fatigue, I think is how you put it. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It's happening today. So I'm going on week 3 of insomnia right now, meaning it can be as light as, you know, waking up several times throughout the night, or sometimes, you know, waking up and being awake for hours. But as this becomes prolonged, you can imagine well, you have children, you know what sleep deprivation is like.
Oh, sure.
Right. So it's, you know, there's already a certain amount of brain fog, they call it, that comes with perimenopause. But then when you add insomnia, fatigue, it just kind of starts to snowball. And then, you know, you have the emotional volatility that again becomes worsened by the fatigue, and it's it can become less and less manageable. It's hard to kind of keep up with all the things that we're supposed to be keeping up with in life.
You say that these kind of symptoms have a pretty big impact on relationships, work. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, when this first started, I was teaching dance full time at Portland Community College. And so I was going in and, you know, I had an incredibly rigorous job. The physical demands were, you know, very high, as well as, you know, being in a room full of mirrors and 20 somethings and loud music and having to remember lots of details of intricate choreography in different styles and for different, yeah, it was a lot. And I felt like it really became clear over the course of a year that it was unsustainable, that I was not going to have the energy, the focus, to really keep up with the demands of that kind of work. When I was on breaks, I would just go into my office, which was formerly a storage closet in the theater. and I would just close the doors and watch RuPaul's Drag Race. It was like my saving grace, this moment of levity and joy when I was just, it was like treading water, like trying to keep up with that, trying to keep up with, you know, my relationship. Imagine, you know, when you have, and when I talk about emotional volatility and mood swings, I mean, it's really like, extremes on either end. It was either like, you know, the Incredible Hulk rage or just wallowing in the pit of despair. So it wasn't like, you know, my husband could reason with me or talk me out of it. It was like, you're so immersed in that experience. It's like your animal body is fully convinced that these things are true. So even if I'm trying to tell myself otherwise, or someone else is trying to tell me otherwise, it doesn't work. Like, that is my reality in that moment. So it becomes really hard. It puts a lot of pressure on partnerships, and not just partnerships. I mean, with kids, and I'm not the, you know, the average 46-year-old here. Like, I'm now divorced. I never was able to have children, so I don't have children. My parents are both relatively healthy and active and living independently. A lot of women who are starting to go through perimenopause, I mean, they're dealing with aging parents that have health issues and need care, children who need care, full-time careers, spouses. I mean, you know, you deserve a medal of honor as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it's a lot to manage.
I just want to take a moment and say how much we appreciate you having this conversation. One of the things that I loved about your writings was that you said, we spend so much time preparing our daughters for marriage and kids and all these things that aren't lasting as long anymore as they usually did. And this perimenopause lasts for what, a little under a decade? And we don't talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it can last up to like 15 years. So it's really a significant time period in a woman's life. And you said you hadn't heard of perimenopause. I had never heard that word. I mean, my mom's friend was a midwife her whole life. And she recently told me that she had never heard of it until her daughter mentioned it recently. And yeah, it's, I think there are a lot of things we can think about to be better prepared. I think the first thing is having those conversations, speak with your mothers. I think, you know, we can't always tell, like, from hereditary ways, like, how this is going to be passed down or how you're going to experience it, but it can be a really good indication, I think, of when you might start it, how long it might last for you. Have conversations, ask them about their experience, ask them what kind of treatments they tried. Like, I know my mother did the hormone replacement therapy, and she felt like, you know, she couldn't have made it through without it. And I speak to a lot of women who feel that way, and yet we're still constantly dissuaded from going that route by a lot of different sources. Once you've had this conversation, assuming you have access to, you know, your biological mother and have a relationship with her, start to ask other women, maybe your mother's friends, maybe some women that you work with. Women your age may already be experiencing this and not talking about it. This is something that I've learned about us is I also have, in my attempts to start a family, had several miscarriages. And again, this was something that no one ever spoke about until I brought it up. And then as soon as I shared my experience, women everywhere were like, oh my God, you know, my sister had miscarriages, or, you know, my wife had miscarriages, or I've had miscarriages. So there are so many things that we don't talk about until someone else is brave enough and vulnerable enough to share that information.
I totally agree. I have had a lot of friends who have connected over the fact that they've had miscarriages, and it's almost shocking how frequent that happens.
It's incredibly prevalent. But again, it's only, I think, within like the last 5 years that I've really started to see more women speak up about it. I'm seeing it in, sadly, I felt like, you know, every movie I watched in the years after I was having miscarriages, a woman was having a miscarriage. But we're starting to open up more about these things.
Are there any other symptoms or you think that people don't really talk about that we need to be ready for?
Yeah, we kind of have to look at like all the different pieces, and that could be anything from, you know, insomnia, fatigue, brain fog, irregular menstruation. I mean, I know some women who have won't bleed for several months, and then it's just like, you know, I mean, they can be in public and it's going through pads, through tampons, through their pants, through their clothing. And so it's really, there are a lot of similarities. Hot flashes are always talked about as, you know, one of the number one indicators. But again, like, there are the things that we don't want to talk about so much. I think the hardest one to talk about is vaginal atrophy. Which women describe in a lot of different ways, essentially changes in the tissue of the vulva and the vagina, and even the depth of it. Some women, I've read a description that was a woman describing it feeling like her vagina was lined with cotton balls.
That's
and
an
it really, I felt like a tissue paper was the image that I came up with, because it just becomes like this delicate, dry, kind of fragile material. And I mean, that there are solutions. So again, you know, take a deep breath and have the courage to talk to your physician and you know, maybe some friends about solutions that they've found for that. And yeah, low libido is another issue, which then that becomes a cycle. If you have low libido and vaginal atrophy, that, you know, can contribute pain and frequent UTIs and infections.
And yeah, I heard really great things from healthcare providers about treatments for vaginal atrophy. So there are some diverse options out there that we probably won't talk through all of them today because we have so much to get to, but there is hope. Like, that's the nice thing, right, about opening up the conversation, is knowing that there's things that you can do.
Absolutely. And sometimes I feel like, I don't know, like I'm bringing doom and gloom, by talking about these things or like frightening younger women. And that's not my intention at all. I think that's clear. I think it's just much more about, again, like what you've mentioned of, you know, what can we do? How can we be better prepared for this? How can we not have to like walk through this alone? And I think, you know, be prepared that it's quite possible that you will come into a meeting with a physician better informed about perimenopause than they are.
And let's talk about that for a second, yeah. Heidi, because you had a longer journey of seeking out professional help that you say didn't really work out, or you were feeling unheard. So can we unpack that a little bit?
Sure. You know, I wish this was an experience unique to me. I can't remember the name of the book, but I saw a book recently published that was all about this and how this happens much more with women in being kind of dismissed and disregarded by physicians in the healthcare system in general. And it's amazing to me, honestly, it's inexcusable to me that at this point in time with, you know, the prevalence of perimenopause, that there's not more information out there and that, you know, doctors still are relying on treatment options that they would have recommended, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago without much change. I found that many of the doctors that I went to were far too opinionated about what I should do with my body, even when I had really taken the time to consider and weigh the risks versus the, you know, what I was dealing with in my life. And I've heard that repeatedly from women that, you know, they have gone to a doctor finally, courageously, from a place of almost desperation, and have just kind of been, oh, you know, I kept being recommended soy supplements, which, you know, if we look at like estrogen dominance and the, you know, using too much soy, that's going in the wrong direction entirely. Again, totally outdated idea. I'm saying this, and yet I'm really not an expert. I'm speaking more from my own experience and what I've heard from other women and articles I've read. A specialist would be probably much better to speak about these things in more detail. But I was refused hormones, you know, again, based on outdated studies and treatments that previously were quite strong and could contribute to a slight increase in risk for cancer. So, but when you're in the depth of despair and in the muck, and you know, for me, that even led to moments of, you know, having thoughts of suicide. And you go to a doctor desperate for help, and you finally, after years of weighing the options, decide that you want hormone replacement therapy, and just to be told flat out, no. To still feel like we don't have full agency is frustrating, and it needs to change.
It's interesting because the last professional that I talked with on this podcast, Dr. Ryan Dornbeer, was even talking about how most men don't make their own healthcare decisions. So it's funny how it's engendered, but we're still having problems on both sides of that coin as well. And being hurt as women, yeah, has been historically very hard in that setting. I still remember my mother-in-law telling me stories about how they would tie down women while she was giving childbirth during that era. I mean,
yeah. My grandmother was administered shock therapy while she was pregnant with my mother.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing. You finally found some things that you thought were helpful. Can you speak to these?
I mean, I'm hesitant to like really name things.
Well,
because I don't want to
stop prescribing. But
yes, thank you.
Are there any tips? Maybe let's reframe that. Are there any tips you have for women that you think were helpful?
Gosh, you know, I know women who have used a lot of different things. I know for insomnia, you know, sometimes like melatonin or magnesium has been helpful. I know some women who swear by weighted blankets. You know, having a healthy bedtime routine, disconnecting from laptops, televisions, things like that before going to bed. For me with the fatigue, well, actually, my mother was recommending for a while an herbal supplement that uses a rhubarb extract. In the United States, it's called Estroven. And it's supposed to alleviate like all, you know, a list this long, like all the symptoms that I've had. And I was so skeptical after trying a lot of different herbal supplements that really didn't give any lasting relief. And for me, that was like the turning point. You know, it took like 3 months before I really started to notice change. And by 6 months later, I feel like, you know, I'm myself again. I also take vitamin D. I take, let's see, what would be the name in English? I think it's rhodiola. To help with like keeping up my energy levels. I take like the 5-HTP to help with like stabilizing mood. So I've kind of had to a lot, 7 years of trial and error to get to a point where I kind of found like this special little perimenopause cocktail that works with my chemistry.
You have a long relationship with yoga and spirituality. How has that changed over time to support this phase of your life?
Well, I think, you know, another recommendation that I would give women is to figure out now what your touchstones are. Those people, those places, those things, those activities that can bring you back to yourself. One of the things that can be really hard with perimenopause, with, you know, the mood swings, the fatigue, the brain fog, is really discerning, like, okay, so what's true in all of that? Because there's a point where kind of we can't really rely on our feelings. And that can be hard, like distinguishing, like, what's my intuition and what's hormones? So tracking your period is a great way to kind of make that distinction. And then knowing these touchstones. And for me, my touchstones, like my things that I can go back to, are my yoga and meditation practice, walking in nature, time in nature in general, and my connection with my women friends. And yoga now, I mean, I came to it through dance, so it was very much like the physical side of it over the last 20 something years. You know, I've studied the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita, and I've learned more about the use of mantra and pranayama and really kind of explored more of the eight limbs. And now I would say yoga is really just kind of like a natural expression of like how I'm living my life. It's really tied into, you know, my reevaluation of consumption and my impact on the world and the low impact living that I've been exploring. It's much more integrated. And, you know, the physical practice side of it is much more gentle. I'm very much drawn to a more restorative practice, more yin yoga. The connective tissue tends to like get a bit denser as we age. And I find a lot of women that I work with in this age group, especially find that around like the hips. And so like yin yoga is fantastic for working with maintaining that range of motion and that comfort in the hips. And I think, again, how we practice is more important than what we're doing. Like, so really having kind of a non-aspirational practice where we're really in tuned with our bodies, and incorporating the breath with the movement, really being present and feeling enjoyment and celebration of the body, I think is so important at this time for women, because as we're, you know, navigating all of these changes, sometimes, you know, there can be anything from like shame or embarrassment to like feeling a sense of betrayal. And so having, you know, a yoga practice that just really like revels in the juiciness of, you know, your femininity, I think is delicious.
I see a lot of students too around the age of perimenopause and menopause gravitating toward yin, and it's natural because the more you learn about Chinese medicine, you're very yin deficient in those mm-hmm. periods of life. So just to have that kind of nourishment and that base can be so helpful. And I love what you say about enjoying the body, like finding pleasure in the body instead of just these symptoms, right?
Yeah, or and like please don't bully your body at this time. And I think some, you know, there are some approaches to practice that can be a bit that way. And yeah, I think I did a lot of work with Feldenkrais awareness through movement. And I think he used to always say like, when in doubt, like move in the direction of pleasure.
I love that.
Yeah, right.
That's true, right? Have that intuition about you and move toward what feels good. You have created this online community of support for women going through this phase of life. How did that begin? And tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, living as a first generation immigrant abroad alone, and going through the, you know, all of these changes, and this was also, you know, COVID hit not long after I had permanently relocated here. So I was really isolated and I felt like I really needed women and community. And so I just put a little Facebook post out asking if women wanted to do like a little book club around perimenopause and do some, you know, ongoing discussions online. And a couple of friends from the United States did. And we started meeting every week and reading different books about perimenopause, about feminism, about, you know, women and spirituality, sexuality, power dynamics. And I mean, it was really a lifeline for me. And a few months into that, I realized, okay, well, this is needed. And so, you know, how can I expand this a little bit more? And so I created a private Facebook group that's been going for a year now. And the way I witness these women like lift each other up and celebrate each other and you know, swoop in when somebody says like, hey, you know, I'm drowning and I need some help. It's incredible. Like we need more of that in the world. And now in January, a year after creating the book club and the Facebook page, I've created the website, thecronecomfortandwisdom.com. And I've started posting some of, you know, my own essays, and I have been consistently inviting the founding members of the Facebook group to join me in that. And so I'm hoping to have more contributions than just my words, and hopefully a forum and other ways that women can connect and engage. Because I really feel like that connection was the richest medicine that I found throughout this whole experience, and has totally changed my life and my relationship to the women in my life.
You called your website Crone, like that's a first word on it, is Crone. And I just had to smile when I saw that, because traditionally when I'm reading my children books, my little girls, the crone is this ugly old woman who's very wise, but maybe not so well-intentioned. Yeah. Where did you get this word and reframing back to maybe its original purpose?
Yeah, it's funny. Like not a lot of women want to associate themselves with the crone. And we think about, you know, the hag, the, you know, Snow White and the apple. And it's, but the crone is really about this, you know, moving into this third phase of life from a place of power and wisdom and a deep connection to spirit. The crone is also really funny and like full of body humor. And that was another turning point for me, like when I really started to embrace that archetype and learn more about it. I don't know, it was so rich. And I thought, like, I'm a crone now. And I think when we embrace that, we stop mourning the girl and we embrace the woman. And I think it's hugely powerful. But I understand when some women are hesitant to identify themselves as a crone.
What is the book that you had mentioned that has all the archetypes in it?
Yes. Jean Shinoda Bolen. She's a doctor and a psychoanalyst with a background in Jungian psychology. And she's done a lot of different books, but the one that my friend gave me that was a really pivotal book for me at this time is Goddesses and Older Women, Archetypes in Women Over 50. I'm 99% sure that's the correct title. And she goes through all these different archetypes and how we activate them in like different activities and exercises that one can do. And I'm going to keep here, but I'm going to just take a little detour. Before I read that, I read Ada Calhoun's book, Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis, and which is fantastic. I highly recommend those two as a place to start. And Ada Calhoun's book has, you know, she's quite funny. She's a great writer. And she gives lots of like personal anecdotes and almost like case studies, you know, sharing stories from women that she's interviewed. She also gives a lot of facts and information that's really important. And then, so that kind of was like, okay, you know, other women are going through this. This is normal. This is exactly how I should feel. But Dr. Bolen's book was like, oh, like, okay, so now my fears kind of are dissolving a little bit around this. And I feel some connection with other women. But the archetypes was like this invitation into this celebration. I keep using that word, but I think it's really appropriate. The celebration of this transition into midlife and like, oh, there's really something. She uses the term like to become a green and juicy crone, and I love that. And I felt that like, oh yeah, this is a way to really embody this. So not just understand it, but like this is a way to really, you know, embody it and to live into that.
And that's why we're having this conversation, because this doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. Like you said, this can be an empowering time of life, you say. And there was one thing that I would like you to just embellish upon. And you said it's almost like a rising of a phoenix.
There's a lot. Part of it, again, is the age that most women are at when they enter perimenopause or menopause. But there's already kind of a natural change happening. Women who have children, the children are growing up and becoming more independent. Maybe they've even left the house, you know, and they're left with their partner. There's a real desire for more solitude and kind of a deeper connection to spirit, a deeper connection to self. So, and also some of the lovely hormone cocktail that would keep us much more inclined to please others starts to fade. And so I think, whereas women, you know, can tend to focus so much on caretaking and putting themselves last, I myself was like definitely a people pleaser. I kind of went like, you know, two ways that kind of have the same end result, which was like the people pleaser and like the I can do it all myself woman, right? Neither one really, you know, acknowledges community or anything. It's like, you know, I'm here doing everything. And I think women at this age start to kind of let go of some of that. And with that, we reclaim more of our time for ourselves. There's usually like a kind of awakened sense of curiosity, maybe a sense of creativity that comes back. I think it's really like this opportunity to go into this, you know, second half, if we're lucky, of life with like a really different or renewed sense of purpose and a sense of self that's, I think, more authentic and integrated than maybe we are permitted or believe we're permitted to feel or to be when we're younger.
Thank you so much to Heidi for taking time from Portugal. If you'd like to learn more about her ecology retreats, visit her website. If you like our podcast, please like it, please share it, and take care until we see you in 2 weeks.